Welcome back to Your Brain Uncovered. This is my third attempt on recording this episode. but yeah, third time's a charm. So today we're going to be discussing the basic gut-brain axis, all right? So this is something you hear a lot. It's a very trendy topic at the moment, but at the same time, it's kind of a black box mysterious thing to treat. So yeah, it usually involves like a lot of lifestyle changes, which is really difficult, you know, to make and to keep up with. You know how I always mention, like, you know, the whole topic of stress management and how crucial of a piece it is for your overall well-being and your brain health. Well, yeah, this is somewhat like it. This is a quite an interesting topic. So yeah, let's first discuss, well, how exactly, like, what is the basic physiology involved in, you know, our gut? Let's go back to the basics, right? Let's go back to the nuts and bolts of our neurons. Neurons are postmitotic, which means they don't go through cell division. So yeah, now they don't regenerate, and I want you to focus on the idea that when the brain's not functioning well, nothing in the body functions well. So yeah, so when neurons die, that's it. You don't get new ones, game over. So yeah, for example, by the time you finish listening to this podcast, you'll probably have lost around 7,000 neurons. Sorry to say, it depends what you're doing while you're listening to, but yeah, and the day we were born, we have more neurons than we'll ever have in our life. But yeah, anyways, that's the bad news. The good news is that neurons can develop plasticity, which means that when you lose neurons, other neurons can adapt to and communicate with each other. So, you know, you can form these new connections that can take place in some cases of the loss of neurons. Now, one of the earliest signs of the brain not firing well is poor vagal activity, which will manifest as decreased pancreatic enzyme secretion, poor bladder function, and a poor gut function overall. And it basically works like this. So you have decreased activity in the brain, and then you have decreased activation of the vagal motor nuclei, which in turn suppresses the intestinal immune system and decreases intestinal blood flow. And when that happens, you get an increased growth in, you know, pathogenic yeast and bacteria that causes intestinal permeability or leaky gut, which, you know, we've talked about a lot. And leaky gut causes a state of chronic low-grade inflammation, and this results in the release of inflammatory cytokines, which go across the blood-brain barrier and end up causing a leaky gut and a leaky brain at the same time. It's not as scary as it may sound, but yeah, bear with me. So yeah, you have neurons, right? And you have something called microglial cells. The microglial cells are the immune cells of the brain. And once they're activated by those, you know, inflammatory cells, this is basically your brain on freaking fire. It's inflamed. And now we have a leaky brain and a leaky and an inflamed brain. So that's not no fun at all, definitely. You know how, like, one of the problems, unlike the rest of the immune system in the body that has, you know, T regulatory cells that can turn off inflammation, the microglial cells don't get turned off. So when you get an inflamed brain, it can be really tricky to reduce that inflammation without some, you know, outside help. You've got an inflamed brain, and the inflammation in the brain decreases, you know, nerve conductance, and then causes depression, reduced activity of the vagal motor nuclei, and of course, then we're back to where we started. So as you can see, we're stuck here in a very vicious cycle, and that's where the brain gut axis comes into effect. So yeah, how does the brain, okay, affect the gut? Now we saw how the gut affects the brain. Now how does the brain affect the gut? You know, everyone has experienced phrases of, like, butterflies in the stomach, gut feeling. That, of course, suggests the connections that we've known for a very long time. Maybe we all know someone that, you know, has lost some bowel control in a state of extreme fear or stress. Certainly, that happens in real life, not just in movies. But yeah, what are some of the mechanisms here? Well, okay, so in the intestinal mucosa, we have blood vessels that are influenced by our autonomic nervous system. Now, the intestinal mucosa is also infiltrated by the myenteric plexus. You know, have you ever heard of the solar plexus? If you ever deal with your, check on your chakras, to all you girls out there. So yeah, this is a network of nerve fibers, and neuron cell bodies are in turn influenced by the brain. So as I said before, the gut basically is one big nervous tissue. And researchers have actually conducted studies where they have stimulated the vagus nerve, which mimics, you know, increasing the brain output in the vagus, and that actually prevented the leaky gut syndrome, or IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, is like seeing ghosts. So yeah, now what are the symptoms of a problem you might be facing with your gut-brain axis? That's now not just because you're, you know, having one of these symptoms doesn't mean it's definite, okay? There's correlation, but it's no causation. Well, fatigue and there's brain fog, these are huge indicators. So chronic digestive problems, especially ones that don't respond to dietary changes, cause progressive cognitive decline, even memory problems, which we see in elderly, of course, but nowadays we're seeing it in 25-year-olds. It's quite sad. These lead to anxiety, depression, ADHD, autism spectrum disorder, behavioral problems, and then here's an interesting one. Did you even know that a big indicator is cold hands and feet? Yeah, it's shocking, I know. even if you have toenail fungus, because what's happening there is that you've got reduced blood flow, reduced circulation to your peripheral tissues and the brain. When you think about it, it is a peripheral organ at the end of the day. So yeah, cold hands and feet and toenail fungus can be an indicator of a brain gut axis problem. There you go. So yeah, now there are things that the brain essentially needs, right? I'm just hitting you with all the bad symptoms, but let's talk about essentials here, basics. Glucose, oxygen, and stimulation. The brain needs these to survive. Now, as far as stimulation goes, that's why people that stay mentally active as they get older tend to age better and do a lot better than people who don't, you know, who just sit on the couch and eat jelly beans and watch TV. And this is another reason why blood sugar regulation is so important. When people come to see, doctors at clinics, the first things the doctor checks is oxygen deliverability and blood sugar regulation, because these two are, you know, practically deal breakers. Now, one second here, as we talk about the brain, we see glucose and oxygen being, you know, two of the main things that it needs. Now, Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and obviously other neurological conditions have been called diabetes of the brain. So why? Because there's been these new theories that illustrate how, managing your gut health would help you manage your mental health. There are even numerous studies showing that, you know, cortisol rhythm maintains blood sugar stability. So if cortisol doesn't go down, you get insulin resistance. And if it goes too low, you can, you know, get hypoglycemia, which is a total disaster for the brain. And then we know that elevated cortisol also damages the hippocampus, and that chronic stress atrophies the brain. It literally atrophies it. And this is also why blood flow to the brain is so crucial, because, you know, blood carries oxygen and glucose and everything we need for the brain. So yeah, you can almost say that blood flow equals to function. So now two of the best ways to increase blood flow to the brain is, number one, exercise. Number two is acupuncture. I think you've seen this on TikTok. People have posted videos doing it. There's this really interesting study even related to the brain gut axis, which I came across, and it was done numerous years ago with patients with IBS. And so doctors used to tell people with IBS that it was all in your head. Now, that's not a really nice thing to say, but it's true. The thing is, it's not true in the way that doctors meant it. You know what I'm saying? Like, they meant you just need to get over this, or you're just imagining it. That's what they meant. But what is true is that it's in your head, in a way that that's where your brain is. And if the gut is malfunctioning, then the brain is involved, and vice versa. I would like to conclude that, yeah, okay, it is all in your head, but not in the sense that we're to blame for it or that we're just making it up. People with IBS do have a decreased pain threshold, and that leads to poor mental health, and they get stuck in an endless loop cycle. And that's just one of the biggest examples of the crucial role of maintaining a healthy gut brain axis, because people can suffer a lot if it's not functioning right. And you can do a lot of you can involve a lot of dietary and lifestyle modifications to improve the gut-brain function, but it requires how do I say this? It doesn't require an instant quick fix approach. It requires long lifestyle changes, and it requires you to switch up a lot between, you know, supplement regimes and different things to find what suits you best and what suits your gut and brain best. I hope this episode has been interesting and of good use, and thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. I highly appreciate it. If you have any suggestions for, you know, future topics you'd like to hear me discuss, feel free to reach out to me. Anyways, have a beautiful day. Bye.